I think it's safe to say that everyone wants the miracles. Everyone wants the bling. Everyone wants to have that great testimony story to tell. But the truth is, nobody wants to have the crises that demand a miracle to get out of, and nobody wants to live through the circumstances that make for an amazing testimony. And today we're going to be doing something a little bit different. I'm Tyler Don Rosenquist. Hi. And I normally teach biblical historical context, but due to popular demand, I'm going to be recording our adoption testimony. And I'll probably cry. I'm already crying. It's just terrible. My kids are 18 now. But in many ways, it all seems like it was just yesterday. And it's an amazing tale of sexual assault, of just saying no to abortion, of a barren couple who were praying and dreaming of children. It's a story of terrible loss and terrible triumph. It's a story of disability and healings and miracles. And if I hadn't lived through it, I probably wouldn't believe it myself. But I think that when we have a testimony like this, it behooves us to share it with the world, because this is not my testimony. This is God's testimony of what he did in our lives, what he did in the life of our birth mother and her family, and just everyone who was involved with this process from start to finish. It's a remarkable story. It's unbelievable. It's amazing. It's heartbreaking. It's, well, I guess I ought to probably just start. I became a Christian in January of 1999, 2 years after I had my first stroke, and it was the worst one that I've ever had. I've had them since, but that one was the worst, and they put me on some medications afterwards that just sent me in a horrible downward spiral into some terrible behaviors, and I didn't emerge from them for about 2 years. At which point God was waiting for me, and in 1999, in January, as I said, I was saved. And I guess the funny thing was, I was 29 at the time, and I had never wanted children. And my husband and I, well, I had always said that if I didn't have kids by the time I was 30, that I was never going to have them. And geez Louise, lo and behold, I get saved the year that I turned 30, and it was like this crazy thing happened. I guess it was my sister-in-law had a baby, and then for some reason, all of a sudden, I was just possessed with this wild desire, this uncontrollable desire to have a baby for the first time in my life, and it came just out of nowhere. Of course, now I know that God was setting up for an amazing chain of events, but it was pretty tough to take. So, we decided to have a baby, and I started trying to get pregnant, and got pregnant pretty much right away, and I lost the baby right away, the week before Mother's Day, 1999, and I can't even tell you how horrible it is to walk into a church where they're handing out flowers to all the mothers, and everyone knows that you've just lost a baby, and the person handing out the flowers says maybe next year. And I'm sure, you know, men can be kind of clueless, but, you know, women can too. And unless you've been through miscarriage and barrenness, especially with certain generations, it's something that wasn't talked about. It was something no one could do anything about. It was just something that happened. The infertility rate is so high now, and the miscarriage rate is, I don't know if it's as high now, but a lot of women lose babies, and it is a loss. It's something that needs to be mourned. It's not something to be just swept under the carpet, or you end up like I did enduring 17 years of undiagnosed postpartum depression after miscarriage. But, so we lost that baby, and I was able to get pregnant again 4 months later, lost that baby. And then we lost our third baby the week that the first baby was due. And I knew that because I signed up for all those things on the internet, you know, all the baby.com and everything. And all of a sudden, in the midst of just unfathomable grief and pain, I started getting congratulation announcements. Because you couldn't take those things back. And all those companies knew that you were due. And, you know, I just wanted to die. And I laid on the floor of the nursery. This was in January 2000. I mean, I'd just only been a Christian 1 year. And all this stuff was happening. And my faith that was, like, absolutely new, painfully new, was being tested in ways that I had were unimaginable to me. Just a year before. And I lay on the floor of the nursery, just brokenhearted and dying inside. And I said, God, I want to be a mother more than anything in this world, and I believe this is a desire you've given me. But if it is not your will that I be a mother, I need to know because I'm dying. And it was true. I was dying of a broken heart. It was worse than anything I'd gone through in my life. And I just laid on the floor and I gave up all of my hopes and dreams to God. And at that moment, I was actually baptized in the Holy Spirit in the privacy of the nursery. And I just felt this cold wind rush through me, but I wasn't cold. I was warm. And in that moment, I knew God communicated to me as clearly as I'm talking to you now that I would have children, but they would never, never be from my own body. But as I was okay with that, I was okay with it because I knew I'd be a mother and I knew that it was God's will for my life. Doesn't mean that I didn't still mourn my children and I didn't still suffer, but there was hope and I stopped dying inside. Oh, my husband was not as easily convinced, and so we went through hysterosalpingogram, and if any of you ladies know what that is, you're wincing right now, and other painful and humiliating tests, and another pregnancy only to lose it. But finally, on a day in late July of 2000, my husband came to me. And he said, you know what? God's told me that we're not going to have any children. And I guess the look on my face just crushed him. And he says, no. Biological children. We're not going to have any biological children. It's time to adopt. Of course, I said, oh, you're just a big jerk. That's not what you said. You said we never have any children. Poor guy. Guys, you really got to be careful how you speak to women who are on progesterone supplements. Just saying. But, so we got on the registry, and I turned up pregnant. Realized I was pregnant a couple of weeks later, and my due date was April 13th. Sorry, no, that's not true. That's my wedding anniversary. It was April 10th. April 10th was my due date. And, but I couldn't even think about the pregnancy because I knew it was not going to happen. God told me there would be no biological children, and I believed him. And I lost that baby at the same point in the pregnancy I'd lost the other ones. And we got on an online Christian adoption website. And this is, I'm going to go forward with the story and then I'm going to backtrack to Stephanie's story. On October 9th of 2000, my husband was headed out on a trip to to Southern California for a business trip. We were living in Southern Idaho at the time, in a little town called Burley, 15,000 people, and he drove to Twin Falls, and he arrived in plenty of time for his flight, but they'd given his seat away, and he was so angry. So angry. He was a new believer, too. Newer than me, even. And he calls me, he says, oh, they gave my flight away and everything, and I just said, Mark, I just have this feeling that God was saving you from a accident or something. I just feel like today is important, and besides, it's your birthday, we can spend it together. And so, yeah. So Mark comes home from work, and he goes in the shower, and the phone rings. And I answer it, and all of a sudden, I find myself speaking to a young woman who I didn't know. And she says, hi, my name is Stephanie. And I know that you are the parents that God has chosen for my babies. And my response was, did you say babies? And she said, yeah. Yeah, they're twins. They're infertile twins. And I just laughed. I said, oh, honey, I'm infertile. I think you mean fraternal. And I could hear her mother in the background just laughing. She says, oh, Stephanie, they're fraternal twins. Oh. And we all laughed, and it really cut the tension. And she told me that she was due on April 10th, the same day I had been due. And she was 3 months pregnant, which meant I didn't have to worry about her having a miscarriage, which meant a lot to me, because I wouldn't have even been able to deal with it before that day. And I told her, I said, Mark's in the shower and I'm going to have to talk to him. Can you call us back tomorrow? Is that okay? And she says, yeah, no, I'll call you back. I can't wait. And she says, but I just know this is going to work out because this is, you know, God gave her such peace. She knew. So Mark got out of the shower and I told him, and he was excited, and I called my mother and she was excited. We called his mother and everybody was excited. And Stephanie called the next day, and we just sealed the deal. And all of a sudden, I went from grieving to just full of joy and wonder and hope. And I'm going to take you back to quite possibly that same day that Mark came to me, and I believe it was the same day that Mark came to me and told me that that we would be adopting. And Stephanie's story also comes from a place of heartache. And that was the day that she was forced into a sexual encounter by an ex-boyfriend. And it was non-consensual. She had gone off birth control, hoping that this guy that she had a restraining order out against, and she had for a while, would stay away from her, and it wasn't to be. He assaulted her, and she got pregnant. 2 weeks later, she was praying to God, and she says, God, I need you to remove him from my life. She wasn't a believer yet, but she was desperate enough to try prayer. She says, I need you to remove this guy from my life, because I just can't get away from him. Nothing's working. And she got a call later on, I think that day, from the guy's grandmother saying that he was in jail. That he and two of his buddies, they were all in their 20s, were in the car with three 16-year-old girls, and they were driving back to one of their places. And then he was in a hit-and-run accident, and he was the one that hit, and he was the one that ran. And thank God he ended up being in jail for 15 months after that. Actually, no, that's not true. He was in jail until the boys were 15 months old. So almost 2 years he was in jail because of other crimes he had committed. Theft. He'd even broken into people's house to steal their Christmas presents from under the Christmas tree to pay for drugs. He was a very vicious man, and I guess that's enough said. But, so Stephanie, her first response is, God, did you just do that? Did you just remove him from my life? Did you just save me from him? But she still wasn't willing to give her heart to him. And then, of course, she came up pregnant. Well, after talking to a friend of hers, and she was 18 at this time, the first thing she did was make an appointment at the abortion clinic because this was just a lump of cells. It was nothing. But then she started cramping. And she got her aunt to take her to the local clinic, and they did an ultrasound. And of course, the person at the ultrasound tech had no idea that she had an abortion clinic lined up. And he did the, she thought she was having an ectopic pregnancy, and she'd heard once that if you have an ectopic pregnancy and you get an abortion, that the abortion can kill you. And I thank God for whoever told her that. Seriously, you never know what information's going to just save someone's life. Anyway, she had the ultrasound, and the person just turned the screen door. She says, no, you're not having a tubal pregnancy. You're having twins. And she'd said, nuh-uh. And they turned the screen, and they showed her, and they were just two little lima beans. I mean, just 6 weeks into the pregnancy. And she just saw them, and her heart went out to them, she said. Her heart went out to them, and she knew she couldn't kill them. And the ultrasound person left, and left her to clean herself up, and she was feeling bad. She was feeling very slutty and very confused, and she felt bad because she knew that so many people couldn't have babies, and here she was with two, and the father was in jail, and her life was a mess, and she was just starting to get it picked back up. And then all of a sudden, she's pregnant. And God spoke to her. He says, Stephanie, you need to trust me. I have a plan for you, and I have a plan for them, but you've got to trust me. And she just, this is Stephanie, she just did. She gave her heart to him. Right there on the ultrasound table. And, her aunt starts banging on the door. Stephanie, Stephanie, are you in there? She says, yeah. She says, well, you got to come out here. So Stephanie got dressed and she came out the door, and her aunt was holding a cross that she'd found on the floor outside the door. And she says, look, I found this. I think it's a sign from God. And she didn't know that Stephanie had just given her life to Jesus Christ on the ultrasound table. And I know you might call him Yeshua, but this is accurate. Anyway, Stephanie and her family, they started looking on the internet immediately for an adoptive family because they all had peace. And so many people independently found us right away. And I'm not anything to look at, neither's Mark, and we aren't rich. We aren't anything, but we're the parents that God chose. And she called the person who ran the abortion or the adoption site, and she says, well, Tyler's not going to be able to take you seriously till you're 3 months pregnant. Please don't call her till then. But we're really, really excited, and we'll be praying for you, and we're excited about this. And so Stephanie called the day she was 3 months pregnant, and that was Mark's birthday. And so we were all really happy for about a month. But on October 31st, even this is before I wrote my book on covenants. Gosh, I got to tell you how important covenants are to me. This was before I'd studied covenants, before I wrote my book on covenants. And I wrote her a covenant and I said, we are committed to you. And it does not matter if the birth father contests the adoption, which he did from jail. It doesn't matter if there are disabilities, because any baby that comes out of me has an exponential greater chance of having disabilities than any baby that comes out of you. We will not abandon you. We will not fight you if before the adoption is finalized. If you try to get them back, we'll give them back right away because we know you'll win. And we want the babies to be with whoever's going to be their mom and dad immediately. And we don't want to drag it out. So I wrote that, and about a week later, Stephanie had her four-month alpha-fetoprotein screening, it came back. Came back with bad news. I can't remember if the amount was low or high, but the doctor told her that one or both of the babies either had spina bifida or didn't have a brain in their head. And it would be another 10 days before we could have the specialized ultrasound. So they could see, because these 3D ultrasounds, these specialized ultrasounds weren't, you know, available on every street corner back then. This was 19 years ago almost. And Stephanie called me. And she told me, and she was just so devastated, and I was so devastated. We cried together, and I said, I meant it. I'm not gonna, you know, we don't care. I said, if there's something wrong, then I want to be their moms even more. We'll just pray. I'll get my church family to pray, you get your church family to pray, and we're gonna get through this. This is gonna be okay. And so Stephanie had the ultrasound 10 days later, and they found out that baby B had spina bifida and hydrocephalus, which meant the skull was... the cerebrospinal fluid had no way to drain from the skull, and so... it's okay in utero before the skull is fully formed. The brain doesn't crush as badly, but we knew that he would have spinal cord disability and he would have learning disabilities. So Stephanie was in the room with the doctors, and they made a mistake because she's a mama bear. She is a mama bear. My kids are so lucky to have two real moms. And doctor said to her, says, you can abort that one if you want. And she, all of a sudden, she stopped crying and she got angry and she says, his mother would never consent to that. They're both perfect. I'm not getting an abortion. No one's getting an abortion. I don't want to hear anything about abortion. Something like that. I wasn't there. And so they dropped it, and they never mentioned it again. And still, she left that room, and she was scared, though. I mean, she didn't know me. She had such peace about everything, and we developed such a close relationship over the phone, but she didn't really know me. She didn't know if I'd back out. She didn't know if Mark would back out. And so she was crying, and she called, and she told me. And we cried. We cried and said, it's okay. It's okay. I'm not, we're committed to this. We love them. We love them. They've been our children for 6 weeks now. I'd rather die than live my life without them. And so we cried a little bit more, and then we hung up the phone, and then it was like, just I had this epiphany, and I called her back, and she said, what? And I said, hey, you just had an ultrasound. Are they boys and girls or what? And she says, oh, baby boy, baby B, the baby with the spina bifida is a boy. And I said, that is my Andy. That's my Andy. And we had already talked about names. And she had asked me, she says, well, what names do you want? I said, well, girl's name's Gabrielle Faith, and why can't I remember the other one? I can't remember the other one. But the boys' names were Matthew, Gabriel, and Andrew David. Gabriel after the angel who always told women who had no business having babies that they were going to have a baby. I believe that's the one who appeared to Elkanah's wife, you know, when she was going to give birth to Samson. And obviously the angel that appeared to Mary when there was no earthly way she could have a baby. But and the other is Andrew David. Andrew after my favorite disciple, and David after a man after God's own heart. And she said, well, that's great. And we hung up, and she says, Mom, Matt and Andy, why does that sound familiar? And her mom said, well, Stephanie, you grew up with identical twin boys named Matt and Andy. And that's about it for this half hour. It's just one more amazing confirmation. We'll be right back. So welcome back to Character in Context, and this week I have been crying my way through our amazing adoption testimony that is now 18 and a half years old. But I'd left off right after we had the special needs diagnosis on our son Andrew, telling us that he would have spina bifida and hydrocephalus, which meant we weren't sure if he would ever walk. There are a lot of other things we weren't sure. Disabilities that aren't mine to talk about. They're his. Because with any special needs problem, some problems are more humiliating than others, and they're not mine to talk about. But so we got that squared away, and we just obviously we were going to go ahead with the adoption because we were even more committed to being their parents after we found out that Andrew was going to be significantly disabled. And I bought every book in the world on spina bifida. Well, the ones in English, anyway. And I learned everything that there was. I talked to doctors, talked to local doctors. I talked to Primary Children's down in Salt Lake, which is an excellent children's hospital, 3 hours from home, but it was the closest place that we could get medical care for him once he was born. It was very fortunate that the hospital that Andrew was going to be born in, the one that his biological grandmother worked at, knew everyone, was able to choose the staff for the surgery and all the doctors and everything. That was just an amazing blessing. Was one of the top spina bifida hospitals in the world. So that was another amazing quote unquote coincidence miracle. Then that was the time when the jailed birth father decided that he was going to contest the adoption, and according to psychiatric records, he was under this delusion that if he forced Stephanie to raise them, that he could have sexual access to her on weekends until the boys were grown up. And it's hard for me to even talk about that because I love her so much. And the thought of my boys being pawns in someone's games just so that he could have what he wanted is just, it's so horrific to me that someone would use a child like that. Much less two. But, so he decided to contest, and that's when things started getting crazy. As if they weren't crazy enough, right? But, so we went through legal wranglings over the next few months, but we knew that this was God's will. But it was so odd because nothing was going right. I mean, we had this wonderful adopting twins. That's everybody's, like, that's everybody's golden ticket. Because adoption is so stressful and so difficult and such a harrowing way to become a parent. And it's so full of risk. People are rightly scared. But we're like the one in, it's not one in a million, but it's not that far off that to get a special needs diagnosis and to also have it be contested, it was unthinkable. Special needs adoptions don't get contested. Birth fathers generally want to let them go, but this was just how selfish this guy was to get what he wanted and to consign Stephanie to a life as a single mother taking care of a twin set one with significant special needs. But Stephanie's pregnancy went wonderfully. She took such good care of herself and she loved the boys. She still does. Loves the boys so much. We are so blessed to have her as their other real mom. And she did everything went well. In the legal realm, we found out something just terrifying, that until an adoption in the state of Wisconsin is finalized, the children live in foster care. Well, that meant that Matt and Andy, well, we just knew Andy at that point. Matthew was bashful then. He got over it. Um, found out the boys could be in foster care for years. That wasn't what Stephanie wanted. That wasn't what we wanted. We wanted to be able to take care of their medical care, and no foster parents were going to know how to take care of a child with spina bifida. I couldn't expect them to do their homework, and it would be three states away in Wisconsin. I was terrified, but we had a very good adoption attorney, and we actually set legal precedent in the state of Wisconsin when the state of Wisconsin declared us to be their legal guardian / foster parents, even though we were in Idaho, and I had to swear that we would not disappear. And I said, really, where can we go? He needs specialized medical care. We can't bolt. And so, you know, based on that, I think that's really what turned the tide, is that if Andrew hadn't been disabled, the boys would have been living in foster care. But anyway, Stephanie made it full term for twins, which is 37 weeks. And Mark's work at the time, everybody there was just so supportive of us. And they sent Mark on a business trip, which paid for our hotel and his airline ticket. And that was a big deal, because I'll tell you something, in a contested adoption, legal bills rack up faster than you can imagine. $4,000 a month, $5,000 a month, two different months were $40,000 a piece, and we're not wealthy people. We also don't have any retirement because of it. You know, we bought kids instead of security for the future. And it was terrifying watching the money just go and going into deeper and deeper debt. And we were scared. And we knew Andrew was going to need specialized medical care. And yet we had this peace. We knew that it was God's will. God had given us so many signs, so many confirmations that even though everything was going wrong, no one ever doubted that this was God's will. No one involved. But who said these are the times that try men's souls? And for us, It was an ongoing day-to-day battle. But the March 22nd, 2001 came, and Stephanie went in, and I was in the waiting room with her dad and her brother, and she was in getting a C-section with her mom there, which is good, because her mom's a nurse and doesn't mind seeing that stuff. I did not want to see her cut from side to side. Andrew could not be delivered vaginally, or it would kill him, because he had a huge fluid-filled sac on his back. That's why kids with spina bifida in the old days often would die in birth, because it would tear the skin that was... It just, you don't want to imagine it. Then, of course, his head was also very large and filled with fluid, and it would cause brain damage. So C-section was the only way to go. And they took Matthew out, and I heard Matthew cry from down the hall. And I started shrieking. And I said, oh my God, he's alive. And I hadn't realized to that point how traumatized I was by losing all those babies, that even when they were in somebody else and everything seemed to be going so well, that I was still terrified that they'd be born dead. It's just we don't know what we're really afraid of. Oftentimes our fear's just hidden under layers of other stress, like contested adoption. I didn't have time to think about this. But I heard him cry. And then the surgical teams came in, and they delivered Andrew, and they whisked him right off to NICU. And I wasn't going to be able to see him for a few hours. But they called me in once Stephanie was stitched up and taken care of, and they asked her if she wanted to hold the baby, and she said no, that she wanted me to do it because I was going to be his mom. And she just wanted that to be who's holding him. And so I held him, and he was just the most beautiful thing I ever saw. My little, he's been a lot of hair colors and stuff, but when he was born, he was sure showing his genetic heritage. He had dark black brown hair. The boys are quarter Hispanic. And A lot of French blonde thrown in there from their mom. And Italian. They're Italian. But, oh my gosh. Seeing him and holding him was the most amazing experience of my life. But as I was holding him, even though I was so happy, I was so worried about Andrew. I needed to see him. And Mark was able to, when I called Mark and told him that everything was taken care of, they released him from the convention, the training that the company'd sent him to. And everybody was just, you know, all for us and very happy. And Mark came and he took Matthew, and I never got to hold Matthew again for like 3 days. I'm serious. Once my husband got a hold of Matthew, that was just like it. I didn't have twins. I had one baby in NICU, and Mark had Matthew until, of course, the melconium happened. And yeah, then I had a baby. Mm-hmm. Men, right? And, you know, a lot of you women listening, you're just laughing because it's true. Ain't nobody likes melconium. It's just wrong. So after a few hours, they allowed me to go in and see Andrew, and he was just covered with sensors and wires and everything, and his forehead. It was the forehead that only a mother could love. It looked like Frankenstein's forehead because his head was swollen with fluid, and he had the ninja seal on his back, which was shocking to see. I'm not gonna lie, it was shocking. But I was able to spend some time with him and talk to him. And the funny thing was, when I'd visit with Stephanie and when we were together before the birth, he would always recognize, the boys would always recognize my voice. Stephanie said that whenever I would talk, they'd get real still. God was telling them, this is your mom. This is, you know. And I would talk to him, and I wasn't able to hold him until the next day. That night, Andrew had 8 hours of surgery. He had no musculature on the backs of either of one of his calves, and his feet were sticking straight up in the air. And instead of being 3 vertebrae long on the lesion that he had on his spine, it was 6. He was far worse than the doctors saw on the ultrasound, and I'm glad I didn't know. And like I said, his feet were clubbed. They were sticking straight up in the air because there was nothing in the calves to pull the foot down. And it would be about a year before that would even begin to remedy till he started crawling, start pulling him back. At 8 hours of surgery, and I sat, it was in the middle of the night, and I sat in that waiting room for all of those hours. And doctor came out early, and he says, "That boy's a fighter. He's been fighting his way out of the anesthesia for an hour now. And we had to, the job on his back does not look like what we want it to look like, but we can't keep him, we can't dose him again. We can't keep him out any longer without risking his life." He says, and we don't understand something. He does not have any muscles in the back of his leg, but he was kicking all during the surgery, and we don't know how to explain it. So, anyway, a week later, they put the shunt in his head to drain off the fluid, and he still has that. Well, he doesn't have the original one. He has a replacement. He has a nifty new one that he got when he was 10. And it's been a miracle that we haven't had any problems with it, because some parents, some kids with spina bifida, they have to have it changed all the time, and Andrew never had any lasting problems with his. That was an incredible blessing from God. Incredible blessing. So, didn't take us long to figure out that Andrew was quite mentally disabled. He just wasn't picking up on things very quickly, and all through the trial and everything, he just wasn't all there. Finally, when they were 9 months old, we won the legal battle to have the birth father's parental rights terminated. It was very close. We needed 10 out of 12 jurors, and we only got 10. even with his criminal record and all the horrible things and just everything, but that was all we needed. Thank God. And we had no money, but we finally had them. And the funny thing was, as soon as the trial was over, Andrew started getting smarter. And I don't just mean a little smarter. I mean a lot smarter. And when he was 10 months old, even though the doctors didn't know if he'd be able to crawl, he started crawling. And that's not even that far delayed. When he was 14 months old, he pulled to standing, which the doctors couldn't believe. When he was 15 months old, I'm talking about his toes and his feet still pointing up in the air, largely. And when he was 15 months old, he started walking around the furniture. You guys know, you've seen, or if you're parents or you've had little brothers or sisters or whatever, you know what I'm talking about. And he started walking around the furniture with these crazy feet and these hips turned out at the sockets because he had hip dysplasia, really severe hip dysplasia. And then when he was 19 and a half months old, he walked for the first time when I was at a parenting conference. First time I'd ever been gone from him, I'm serious. And he walked 12 steps for his dad. 12 steps, his first time, on these crazy feet. And it was about a year later. Oh, finally, 15 and a half months, by the way, we were able to finalize the adoption, and they were ours, and everything was... finally, we could breathe, because I can't even tell you what it's like day to day, not knowing if someone's going to come and take your kids away, and especially to give them to somebody like that. Someone who's a drug addict, and a thief, and a liar, and worse. But it didn't happen, and it was worth anything for it not to happen. So, anyway, a year later, a year after the whole walking thing without me there, I was watching the 700 Club with the babies. They weren't watching it, I was watching it, and they were doing the prayer section, and I heard God speak to me as loud as day, saying, "It's time to pray for Andrew to be healed." I didn't delay. I turned him over, put my hands on his spine, and I just prayed with all the life I had. And I wasn't satisfied with that. I went to my church and I said, "Okay, God said this." He says, and everybody was just so excited. And Andrew was everyone's little darling. He was. He was like everyone's adopted little son and grandson and nephew. Good grief. That's what happens when I get emotional. I can't tell boys from girls. But, we just all laid hands on it. And 3 weeks after God had spoken to me, I was sitting in front of my computer and I saw a toddler walk by me. And you gotta know, there was a big difference between the way Matt would walk and Aunt Matt would walk like a normal toddler. And Andrew walked like John Wayne, getting off a horse, you know, because he had the bow-legged thing. And he had those crazy feet. He didn't walk. He was always doing this controlled fall. It was like he was always about to fall, but he rarely would. It was just amazing, the boy's determination. Stubbornness, and he still has it. But, so he walks past me. And I said, "Morning, Matt. Morning, Maddie." And he says, "No, Mama, Annie." And I looked and I couldn't believe it, because the child who walked by me had a straight gait. He was walking normally, and I stripped him down and his legs were straight in the socket. The day before, they had been jutting out at horrible angles. And it... bone, tendon, everything. You just... too many miracles to even go into. And so, at our next well baby check at 2 years, I had Andrew on my lap, and the doctor, who had been their doctor since they were babies, said, "Okay." Says he was done with Maddie. Says, And I said, oh, Andrew can walk now. And he says, oh, great, where are his leg braces? Andrew jumped up out of my lap and he was, you know, naked except for his diaper. And he ran into the doctor's arms and the doctor started weeping. He says, this isn't possible. I have never seen anything like this. And he was holding him and he was looking at him and he couldn't believe because he knew what Andrew looked like. He knew Andrew's disabilities. He knew everything Andrew was going to face. And he was looking at a child with straight legs. And he said, what happened? And I said, God spoke to me and told me to pray. And I did. And this happened. And he was astounded. And so were the doctors down at Spina Bifida Clinic. They were amazed too. Everyone was amazed. And it was just, it's an amazing miracle. And I can't remember how old Andrew was when he began to run, which the doctor said he'd never be able to do without leg braces. He never wore them, except for about 6 months when he was like 9, because they thought they would help him for some odd reason, and it didn't help with something. But and in second grade, He started skipping, which a lot of kids, you know, can't even do. Or maybe it was first or second grade. I can't remember. But he skipped. And that's a hard thing to do. And I'll never forget the day when we were living in Texas. So this would be about 8 or 9 years old. And you know, the guys on the workout things, they get those stools and they jump up on them. Andrew decided he was going to do this. I'm glad I didn't know. And he came to me one day crying. He says, Mom, you gotta come and see. And we go and he put that stool down and he jumped up on it. And he says, I'm a regular boy now. I can do it. I can do anything. And, oh, just, you know, there's only one thing worse than being a special needs parent. And that's not being a special needs parent. Oh, we know lows that normal parents can't imagine. But we also know highs that normal parents will never experience. Yeah, your daughter is the prom queen, you know, or your son is the star quarterback. Compare that with seeing a kid walk who's never supposed to walk. And Andrew still has, you know, different medical issues, but oh my gosh. But, you know, we don't know God's ways. Not everything is healed on Andrew. You know what? Not everything needs to be healed on Andrew. So grateful for everything God's done because, you know what? He didn't have to do anything. The only thing he ever said he'd do is make me a mother, and he didn't even owe me that. Not only did he make me mother, but he gave me 2 sons. Twins. And it's to his glory. And it shows his incredible generosity that someone like me, and you do not know it, the life that I lived before, I came to God through Christ. So many years before I ever called him Yeshua. And we went through all this. And it's all for his glory. So that he could show his generosity. So he could show his power. So he could show us that we could depend on him and trust him. Even when things were crazy and everything seemed to be going wrong. In terms of everything that we would feel could go wrong. In the ways of the world. In medicine and everything. But here I am. I'm the mother of 2 adults now. And I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade my testimony of his awesomeness and his generosity and his amazing love for a houseload of biological kids who are all healthy and all star athletes and straight A students and who never had any of the issues that we've just had as our normal day-to-day life. But like I said, You don't get the miracles unless you need them, and you don't have an amazing testimony unless you've lived through some terrible stuff. And I'm grateful for my terrible stuff. And that's it. There's a lot more to tell, but no time. Anyway, thanks for joining me, and we'll see you next week.